Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here's your host, JJ Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off podcast. I am your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan. With me today, he is the Capitals insider. He is the Milhouse to my Bart Simpson. He is Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
I like Milhouse. And Bart was just he was a little punk, which is a perfect and very apropos description of J.J. Regan.
We will make sure that not everything is coming up Milhouse today.
Whoa, wait. Are you making fun of my glasses? Is that a reference to my glasses? to my black framed glasses?
Yeah. Yes, you caught me.
We just went through sensitivity training yesterday here at NBC Sports Washington.
I haven't had that training yet. Mine's today.
Today. Well, yep. Good luck with that. It's long. but we decided we weren't going to make fun of each other. We weren't going to discuss other people's appearances.
Clearly, they haven't heard the podcast.
Actually, you might have to change your bit to open these things after you go through this training.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I'll have to listen to that. What we will talk about today, it is the Mailbag Podcast. You take the time to ask us questions, so we take the time to answer them. This week, you wrote a lot about Hershey and the prospects, so we're going to get into those. Sorry if we breeze through some of the other questions, but there's a lot of stuff on the prospects that I really want to get to, so I don't want to run out of time. So, Tarik, we're going to try to rush through this first block and get through these questions as quickly as possible.
What are you trying to say here, JJ? Are you trying to say I'm long-winded?
I hesitate to even bring that up because every time I say, all right, Tarik, let's try to speed this up, you come out with your longest answer of the day. Every time I do that.
I may be loquacious.
But we're going to try to breeze through these first few questions so we can have as much time on the prospects as possible because there are a lot of prospect questions. So the first question from Garrett Allegra.
What's up, Garrett?
Frequent listener, first-time question asker. I love the pod and the intros. Thank you, Garrett.
Boo.
I've noticed most people have been very optimistic and positive about the Caps this offseason, obviously for good reason, but I'm curious as to what you guys think might be a weakness for this team this year that they will have to either overcome or address at the trade deadline.
I'm hesitant to say weakness without seeing the product on the ice yet, but you can certainly look at the roster and pick out a few areas where they aren't maybe as experienced or as talented or deep as they were last year. I mean, the first thing that jumps to mind, and let's start this by saying most of the team is back.
Yes.
So there's not a whole lot that you can nitpick with, but I would say, number one, I mean, let's be honest, guys, the Caps wouldn't have won their third straight division title. They're going for their fourth straight.
Yep.
If not for Philip Grubauer stepping in for Braden Holtby. Now, look, I don't expect Braden Holtby to have the kind of up and down, uneven season that he had last year, but Grubauer is now in Colorado. There's a young man named Phoenix Copley who we think is pretty good, but we don't know because we've never seen him. Well, we haven't seen him in long stretches. So if Holtby were to stumble or stump his toe or whatever, that'd be an area of concern for me, is you've got an unproven goaltender as his backup. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the past 5, 6, 7 years, it takes two goaltenders to win your division and to win a Stanley Cup. And that'd be an area of concern. And I would say the only other area of concern I have in terms of just looking at the lineup and what they have coming back is Todd Reirden is also unproven as a head coach. I think he, in a lot of ways, has been the brains behind the operation in some areas. I think he's got a really high ceiling, and I think he has the tools and should be a very good head coach in the National Hockey League, but we haven't seen it yet. And until you see it, you can't really rely on it. So to me, that's one and two. And number three, I would say, is something that you can't really quantify or measure. And again, this is something you have to see, is how hungry slash how recovered are the players going to be on a very truncated offseason.
Sure.
This is the first time these guys have gone through an offseason that began in mid-July. You know, I mean, they are still – the season ended in early June, and they're just kind of – things are just kind of winding down now.
Right.
It's going to be different for these guys. So we shall see. We shall see.
In terms of tangible weaknesses, you brought up the backup goalie. That would be an area of concern for me, not only because Phoenix Copley didn't have the sort of season they expected him to have. Now, granted, he was dealing with an injury to start the season. But you want to make sure he can play at the NHL level, because he is unproven, and because the guy behind him is Ilya Samsonov, who's a guy who I don't think they're going to want to rush into the NHL. And if he's the better backup option, I don't think they're going to want to go into the playoffs next season with Ilya Samsonov on the bench as the backup. I think that would be something they would try to address at the trade deadline, if that's the way things work out. Also, I'm a bit surprised they haven't done anything on the third pair defense yet. I know they've been in talks with Brooks Orpik. He hasn't signed anywhere. He hasn't retired yet, so that could be an ongoing thing. But
there's no hurry there. There's just no hurry.
There's no hurry, right? But
he's going to wait for a 2-year deal.
Right.
And if he doesn't get it, which he's probably not, Dad is going to be back.
Right. So I expect that to be addressed. But if it's not, I mean, I remember last year we said you can't have both Christian Jews and Madison Bowie in the lineup for most of the season. And then what happened was most of the season they had both those guys in the lineup. So now we're sitting here saying, well, we can't have them as a third pair. Well, if they don't do something, which I expect them to, but if they don't,
they're going to have the cap space. But if they don't, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It would accelerate, and now it might lead to some circus-like, you know, things early on, as they kind of get accustomed to playing with one another. But it would accelerate their development. I think eventually they see these two guys as being full-time NHLers.
Absolutely.
In their blue line. I mean,
absolutely. You know, the closer you get to that playoff run, though, despite how well they played, I think they would. If those two are the pair, I think they would get a veteran defenseman to supplement that.
I certainly see that. But at the same token, I think Christian Juice has proven himself to be a capable third pairing defenseman.
Yes.
Madison Bowie, you know, had some struggles here and there. Wasn't in the lineup down the stretch or in the playoffs. That said, they kept him around for a reason. They wanted him to see what it looks like. Mm-hmm. They know he's going to be a big part of this team going forward, and they wanted him around. And I think he's going to get every opportunity next year to show that he can be a full-time NHLer. I do, like I said, I like most people, I have concerns about the experience level back there on that third pair. But to me, that's kind of an ancillary problem. That's not really probably in my top five.
We got a few questions about Tom Wilson. Depending on when this podcast gets released, because I don't know when this one's going to get published, he may be signed already. But the latest update there is that he did not file for arbitration, so unless he plans on signing an offer sheet, which nobody ever does ever, I think the question there is more when and not if, right?
Yeah, I think from what I've heard, from what I've been told, from what I've gathered, both sides would like a deal that would keep Tom Wilson in a Capitals uniform for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Tom proved himself last year with a career year. When you have a player like him who brings so many intangibles to the table, those guys are hard to put a dollar figure on.
Right.
It takes some negotiation.
Yeah.
And look, anybody who has ever worked on a contract, like me, knows that, especially when you're negotiating stuff in the summer, it can take time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of phone tag. There's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of, you know, days where your agent's dealing with his other clients and the team is dealing with other things. It can take time. I'm not concerned. This deal will happen. There will be no offer sheets.
No, there's never any offer sheets.
You know, Tom Wilson is going to sign, I would say, a 4 or 5 year deal, most likely. And we'll be here in Washington for a long time. The question is, how much money is he going to get, and what's his AAV going to be? No concerns there.
Sure. Daniel Morgan writes, you spoke about Capitals possibly making a move after signing Wilson. Who are some likely options that the Capitals would make moves for? I mean, Brooks Orpik. He's the guy, Brooks Orpik or a Brooks Orpik type. I mean, that's all they really need right now is a veteran defenseman that they can cycle in and out of that third pair, right?
I would agree with that. You know, I would need to take a finer look at the guys that are available. You got to be careful there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to upset that, you know, they had some good chemistry. The team had some good chemistry last year. And Brooks Orpik was a big part of that. I almost feel like if it's not him, maybe you just ride it out with the youngsters. Maybe even bring up another guy like, you know, Jonas Siegenthaler or somebody.
But that exacerbates the problem. That doesn't solve the problem. If you're worried about experience, you're going to bring up a rookie to cycle in?
I'm not – just to throw in every once in a while, maybe you change the way you have your pairs. I mean, I personally would have the top four exactly how it finished in game five
absolutely.
In Vegas.
Right.
And then you figure it out on the bottom pair. And if your bottom pair can only play 10 minutes a night, they can only play 10, 11 minutes a night – that said, if you're able to get Brooks Orpik back into the fold, I think you got to do it. He just brings so many things that happen behind the scenes. I mean, the leadership, the tutelage of the young guys. You know, he doesn't even have to open his mouth, and you can just see Madison Bowie and Christian Juzé kind of just looking across the room. What's he doing? Yeah, I mean, you just learn so much from having a 37, 38-year-old around, and I hope they're able to get a deal done. You know, I haven't heard this, but at his age, he also might be mulling retirement. I mean, you know, he's got.
He did lose part of his finger last year.
It's back on. I saw it. It's been reattached. It's just a finger.
Yeah.
It's just a pinky. He's got two championships.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he's had a great career.
There's something to be said about going out on top.
Absolutely. So. I have to imagine there's something, someone somewhere is going, hey Brooks, do you really want to, like your final memories will be putting the cup over your head in Las Vegas, or do you want to come back and see if you can maybe recapture that?
Right.
I don't know. I know I would wrestle with that decision, but hopefully they're able to work something out because he brings a lot to the table.
Greg Christian writes,
"What's up, Greg?
The thing that surprised me most during the 17-18 season was learning how much of a warrior TJ Oshie is. What was your biggest surprise?
A warrior?
Warrior.
A warrior. I think you said warrior. I was like anxiety injury, like issues?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was like, wait a minute. TJ's one of the more confident guys I've ever been around.
Oh, there's TJ fretting again on the bench.
Wringing his hands. He's taking his gloves off to wring his hands over the D-zone coverage there.
So what was your biggest surprise? I'm sure besides winning the Stanley Cup.
Besides winning the Stanley Cup.
Yep.
It had to be Barry Trotz stepping down 11 days winning the Stanley
That's
Cup.
A pretty big one.
That had to be it. I mean, look, we all knew about the dysfunction. Nah, I shouldn't say dysfunction, but the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. I mean, it's rough. Whenever you're a lame duck coach and there's people around you who have more years on their contract than you do, there's weirdness there when you're dealing with
a lame duck coach and a coach, an associate coach who's extended past the lame duck coach,
right.
who can't interview anywhere. It was obvious what they wanted to do.
That said, if you were to take him at face value, and he's always been very honest with us, he definitely wrestled with the decision. I mean, there were definitely times where winning that cup changed his opinion of things.
Yes.
I think at the end of the day, it's like whenever you're making a big decision in your life, I don't care if it's work or if it's relationship related or whatever it is, usually your first instinct, we all saw what he mouthed to John Tortorella after that first series.
Yeah.
Usually your first instinct is what you eventually come back to because you kind of talk yourself into, well, you know, winning the cup kind of changed things and maybe I can get the deal that I was looking for and maybe in reality, it's kind of what, you know, you always suspected that it was no longer a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. And that's why he moved on. Still, I was surprised.
Yeah. I think my biggest surprise would be John Carlson. I didn't think he was capable of doing what he did this year. I think he took his game to another level.
Hater.
I know he was very good, but, I mean, I was advocating that they trade him before the Vegas expansion draft so they could protect Schmidt. And okay, before anybody gets it twisted, I'm not saying they should have protected Schmidt over Carlson. They never should have done that. They made the right decision. But I think I was advocating last year that they should trade Carlson before the expansion draft so that they could protect Schmidt because I thought Carlson would make a big money contract for being a pretty good but not great player. And this year he took his game to another level. I didn't think he was capable of that. And he played at a level where the Capitals couldn't justify not bringing him back. So whatever dollar sign they paid for him, the $64 million contract, he earned every bit of it because he was phenomenal this year. And thank you, Tarek, for going long-winded on the questions that I thought we were going to go short on so that we could have more time for the prospects. But we're going to start with all these questions about prospects right after this quick break. Welcome back. As promised, there are a lot of questions about prospects. But first, before we get into those, I want, because fans sometimes have a weird idea about prospects. I want to start with this. Because, Tarik, you know I've been doing prospects pretty much since I started contributing for the Capitals at NBC Sports. Yep. I've been following the prospects, and I've done the top prospect article for the Hockey News the last 2 years. So I'm very familiar with the prospects. In doing that, I've talked to Ross Mahoney and Troy Mann the last 2 years about the team's prospects. And these are the guys whose jobs basically depend on how good these players are. These are the guys who are they are supposed to hype up these players. And when I talk to them about the best prospects in the organization, here's what I hear all the time. Bottom six potential. Bottom six potential. Bottom six potential. Maybe NHL potential. I think a lot of people see these prospects and see how well they play in junior leagues and against other prospects and think that all these guys have NHL potential. A good number of these prospects will never make the NHL. In fact, when I talked to Ross Mahoney in January, there was only one offensive player who they said had more than top six potential, and that was Garrett Pilon, who they said could play second or third line in the NHL. But most of these guys, if they make the NHL, they're probably going to be depth players. So I think a lot of people get really excited about these players and put unreal expectations on them. And so that should be in everybody's mind as we're answering these questions about prospects, because don't put unreal expectations on these players. With that in mind, we're going to start with Caroline Hemenev. There was a random V at the end of that name. So I'm going to go with Hemenev.
Two Vs?
No, it's just one V.
Okay.
NV. So.
What's up, Caroline?
What are the factors that go into bringing in drafted and other Caps players from the AHL and other teams into the NHL? What are the pros and cons of nurturing a few along with the Caps for a while, the way Taylor Chorney and Michael Kempney were, versus regularly swapping players out in search of the right fit, and how do Reardon and Trotz differ on this? A lot to digest there.
Well, I mean, look, drafting and developing players, Caroline, I mean, that's the lifeblood of an organization. If I don't care if you're talking about the NHL, you're talking about NBA, NFL. If you're constantly taking other teams' drafted players and discarded players and trying to build your group, you're going to fail.
Right.
Your core players have to be your drafted guys, guys you brought into the organization at 18 years old and you have developed and brought along, and they're familiar with your systems and your staff and your teammates. You look at the teams that have the most success and have sustained success. Those are teams that went through a probably rough rebuild at some point, and a ton of players grew together in the AHL and then kind of en masse came to the NHL as a group of six or seven in a span of a couple of years. That's what's happened with this Capitals team. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that core has been peeled off here in recent years, but a lot of those guys are still around. And you need that chemistry, you need that continuity. But again, drafting and developing is how you do it. If you are constantly signing players on the free agent market, you're not only overpaying and breaking your salary cap.
Yeah.
You're doing it the wrong way. I would say Trotz was certainly, I mean, one of my more favorite lines, and he repeated it usually three or four times a year, was, this is not a developmental league. This is a performance league, which was his way of saying, I don't have time for dudes to come up at 22 years old and mess around and screw things up and make mistakes. I got to win now. Todd Reardon, I think, has been more skewed towards the developmental side.
At least with the defenseman.
Yeah. But he's also, you know, he understands the game. He understands forwards too. I wouldn't undersell him on that part. I would say he's going to be a very good guy for a very good coach for the younger players that are going to need some of that nurturing and that tutelage and that kind of steady hand to kind of guide them. I think he's going to be very good with those guys. He's good with communication. He's good with communicating and connecting with young players. So I'm not saying that was a problem for Trotz, but when you look at the young players that really kind of came of age last year, I give a lot of credit to the staff on a whole, but also to Reardon.
Right. I think one of the big factors for bringing players from the AHL as well is that it's a guess. It's a gamble. If you're the Capitals, would you rather have Michael Kempney, who you know can be a top four defenseman on your team, at least when he's paired with John Carlson? Or would you gamble on a player whose NHL potential is unknown, like a Lucas Johansson, like a Jonas Siegenthaler? And I think where your team is and what your team's goals are for the next season play into that. The Capitals just won the Stanley Cup with Michael Kempney as one of their top four defensemen. So for next season, since they still see this championship window as open, and why not, they basically brought the entire team back, you're going to lean more towards playing a guy like Kempney over trying out some of those prospects. If they were tanking and they knew they weren't going to make the playoffs this year, then you bring in a lot more of those prospects, you have them develop, because you know if they make a mistake here or there, they can learn from that, but it's not going to cost you because you weren't going to make the playoffs anyway. So I think that goes into a lot of it. It's a balancing act. You know, how many of these players do you bring in? What are your goals for the season? There are a lot of factors that go in, probably more than we can discuss on a 30-minute podcast, but it's a definite balancing act. Moving on to Luka. Okay, I'm sorry, Luka, in advance. Luka Knežević. That's not too bad, I think.
You're brutal.
Luka writes, "Don't you think Capitals have too many long-term contracts? They give certain continuity to the club, which is good, but are also making it hard for young talent to make the team, which we saw last season is a good thing. Next year's Caps will have a log jam on the blue line with Johansson, Hobbs, Siegenthaler, Colby Williams, all waiver eligible, four NHL Deans signed, at least two more seasons, and two promising NHL youngsters. What is the Caps' plan with these prospects?"
Well, I mean, I do know what you're saying. I mean, certainly signing players to those long-term deals does limit some flexibility. It does also, if you believe in that player and think he can perform for a number of years for you, you're also giving yourself some pretty good cost certainty. When you start handing out contracts like the ones that went to Kuznetsov and Oshie and Eller and Carlson and Kempney and Orlov, you're also pretty sure that those guys are going to form your core going forward. So like I said, it gives you a pretty good steady core. It gives you some cost certainty, but you're right. I mean, it does certainly, put up some roadblocks for some young players, but you know, the players you named there, I mean, I don't feel like those are guys that are like banging on the door right now and going play us right now.
Right.
I'm not saying they're never going to make it at all. I'm just saying, from what they have seen and from what I've heard from what they've seen, let's be honest, I cover the Capitals. I'm not watching Hershey Bears games.
Right.
I'm not watching Stingray games. I'm not watching Junior games. But the Capitals have a staff of people who get paid a lot of money to go watch those games. And I can't imagine that when you're managing a cap, you're not signing players to long-term deals if you think there is a young player that can come and replace him for a lot less money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my answer there.
Yeah, Johansson, Hobbs, and Siegenthaler are all guys that they think have NHL potential. I think Johansson's probably the best all-around player of those three. Hobbs and Siegenthaler still have a few questions. None of those three, I think, the Caps are planning on having here for 82 games next year. Certainly
no,
not.
No.
They want to see what they can do in training camp against NHL players.
Yeah,
but
I would say Siegenthaler will get a cup of coffee next year.
He will probably but there
Hobbs maybe Johansson as well. Johansson is a guy who's penciled in for a year or two from now.
Yes,
as a full time. All right, son, you've played 3 years in the A. You had a very good year last year. You're our number four next year. Get yourself ready.
Yeah, I think that's where they are with him. Siegenthaler, I think they like what he brings, but I think there are some questions there. I think they were concerned about the one summer he came in and he was pretty out of shape. And Hobbs has a special shot, but I think they still need to. They're still looking for him to develop a little more defensively. The amount he grew in the last year, I think, is impressive, and I think that speaks well towards his future. And as for Colby Williams is a fantastic skater. I'm not sure that they see him as a full-time NHL player in the future. But you know what? If Johansson, Hobbs, and Siegenthaler all turn into bona fide NHL defensemen, that's not a problem either. Because if you have too many assets at one position, then all of a sudden you have a very valuable trade commodity. Look what happened with the Nashville Predators. They had defensemen galore. And so what they shipped out Seth Jones for a top line forward in Ryan Johansson. So this is a good problem for the Capitals to have if they have this logjam, because then you have a trade asset.
And Ryan Johansson, by the way, is Lucas's
brother. So it all ties together. we've got more questions on the prospects, but we're going to get to those right after a short break. Welcome back. getting back to your questions, this one is from Empty Maybe. That is what the email address said.
I actually know who that person is.
Oh, what's really? Up?
Yeah.
Empty Maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. Empty Maybe writes...
That was an album, right? Wasn't it like a Stone Temple Pilots album?
Empty Maybe?
I'll have to Google that.
Fellas, do you think the Caps have any more minor signings in mind? Seems like Hershey could use another scoring forward and another veteran defenseman. Well, in terms of forwards, here's what Hershey...
Oh, no, that was Big Empty. Sorry.
Big Empty. I don't think they're looking for a scoring forward because here are the forwards that Hershey stands to have next season who did not play last season. Yusso Ikonen, Shane Gersich, Maximilian Kammerer, Axel Janssen Fialbi, Brian Pinhoe, Garrett Pinlon, and Beck Malenstein. So I think they're probably set at forward because that's a lot of offensive talent that they're adding to the roster this year. Now, maybe...
I agree.
Maybe a couple of those players...
By the way, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
But you know who looked really good in development camp? And I know it's development camp and you're going up against other guys who aren't NHL players.
Who?
Malenstein looked pretty good. Like, he really jumped out to me a number of times.
Really?
As a guy who I think... He changed my mind, put it that way.
Axel Janssen Fialbi stood out to me.
Yes, he did. Absolutely.
Shane Gersich,
looked like a man amongst boys. My favorite thing was watching Shane Gersich in either live drills or in scrimmages and to watch the reaction of the other players when he just dogged them on, like, the back jack.
Yeah.
And, like, you could just tell they were like, why is this? I mean, it was like watching an NHL player going against a guy who still has to learn
right. What
it takes to get to that level.
Yep.
He wasn't there too. You didn't see that from Shane 2 years ago. But just, like, his level of doggedness on the puck, it was a whole nother level from what anyone else had.
Right. And we just talked about three defensemen who we think we have NHL potential. So I think they're pretty set there. I think Hershey's in good shape for next year.
The only thing I would say that I'd like to see them add, you started this conversation off with, is I want to see some more top-level prospects. And obviously, you know,
the forwards, they are lacking in top-level forward prospects.
Right. I want to see some of these first-round draft picks the past few years, you know, especially this year. And they drafted Alex, who's a D. But I want to see them replenish their cupboards in the next couple of years with some Jake Varanas, with some Andre Burakovskis, with some, you know, some real skilled, talented guys who you could expect to be more than a third or fourth line player. You know, so some potential 25 goal scorers. I like to see some of that.
Going off that, Tark, Sutter is the highest drafted forward the Caps have drafted since Jacob Vrana.
Yeah.
That is, they're lacking in top-level offensive prospects.
Sure.
So that's definitely something that maybe they should focus on in drafts, although I will maintain that you always take the best available player. Always, always, always in the draft.
Always. Yeah, I mean, Sutter's a guy that I he's still years away, but they've got high hopes for him.
Yeah.
He's got some pretty good bloodlines.
Also, Tark, what's your go-to at Taco Bell?
My go-to at Taco Bell... I would say the double decker taco supreme. It always ends up in my bag. I go there with one thing in mind, and the double decker taco supreme always ends up in there.
Okay, we have one last question, and we have about 4 minutes. So,
okay.
Tark, this time you actually have to be quick. Paul Oxley writes,
don't tell me what I actually have to be.
There seems to be a bit of an uproar in the Hershey community of late that the big club hasn't been dedicated enough to their team and their fans about helping them win their next Calder Cup. And that team is only there to develop players to make the Caps better in the future. What are your thoughts?
That is always the danger.
Always.
Always the danger of affiliating yourself with a team, with an AHL team that is steeped in history the way Hershey is. Hershey has a bunch of Calder. I forget how many exactly. They got a lot of Hershey, Hershey-colored, chocolate-covered, banners hanging in their Giant Center. They are used to winning up there. For years, the Capitals felt like they had too many older players, too many AHL veterans that were trying to deliver a championship for Hershey and weren't doing a good enough job of developing their youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Hershey is upset that they're sending all these kids down there to be developed for the big club. So it's always that kind of fine line you have to walk. I thought they had reached a pretty good balance the previous couple of years.
Yep.
But I can understand how people in Hershey are looking at what's coming down there this year, and they go, this is going to be tough to win with a bunch of, you know, 20-year-olds. But when you're the Capitals, you don't want any 29-year-olds. I mean, that's not helping you out.
Yeah.
That guy is not helping. I mean, you know, once you get over 26 years old, you're kind of the label prospect is you're no longer a prospect.
Right.
You're an AHL veteran, and you're not helping the big club.
Alexander Giroux is one of the best players in Hershey history.
Did he score like 70 goals one year?
Yeah.
Crazy.
But he was essentially useless to the Capitals. They couldn't bring him up. He wasn't going to play in the NHL. Right. So he's not someone that you want to keep around. Here's the thing about Hershey. I think Hershey needs to settle down. They didn't make the playoffs last season. I get it. But they made it each of the last three seasons before that, and they made it to the Calder Cup final in 2016. This year, the Capitals had a good team, and they needed their younger players to supplement their roster. They haven't needed that in the last few years because they've had so many veterans, they didn't need it. This year, they actually needed it, and now everyone's up in arms saying, look, you can't take our players.
Well, I mean, look, Jake Virana and Madison Bowie and Christian Juice, I mean, they were NHL ready. They needed, I mean, the whole point of the AHL is to get those guys ready.
Yes.
Now, the one thing I could say, if you're a Hershey fan, is Travis Boyd got called up a lot. He didn't play a lot either. Now you can kind of why do you keep calling up some guys who aren't really getting in your lineup and that's our first line center? And
Travis Boyd I can understand because they called him up and he didn't. You're right. They called him up basically as an extra and he sat in the press box and he didn't play a whole lot and he could have helped Hershey in the late stages of the season. So I understand that. But you know what? You've had most of these players for several years because the Capitals didn't need them.
Right.
This year they
needed them. They're in retool mode now. You know, they've got a new coach coming in. They got a new staff coming in, and they got a bunch of new players coming in. So
it's a balance.
It's a retooling. And I can understand why people are down there because they're used to winning championships down there.
There's a lot of history there.
This year is going to be different.
But sometimes the big club needs those players. If you want to have your questions read and answered on the next Mailbag podcast, you can send it into capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. We really appreciate the questions. You guys gave us over half an hour worth of content for this podcast. I didn't have to do any research. I didn't have to do any work. I just took your questions. That really helps us out a lot. It shows how much that you guys enjoy the podcast, so we really appreciate it. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. Thanks as always for tuning in. Thanks for your questions. For Tarik El-Bashir, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.
See you guys.